How about the basket catch that Willie made? You make that catch?
I tried that once and I dropped it. Dropped the ball, so
Oh, okay.
I didn't try it anymore.
I tried that once playing Pony Coatley. I was 18 years old. Flipped the thing down, hit me in the chest. Long fly ball to center field, hit me square in the chest. It fell in my glove, luckily. Last time I tried that, that hurt so much.
See, that was a flair that Willie had.
Yes, it was.
It really wasn't a proper way to catch a ball.
Right.
But he caught him.
It's kind of diverged two different sets.
No, because Dobie came in and went to the Cleveland. The Yankees were one of the last teams to have a black player.
Yeah, Yankees and Sox. Okay. Pick up with the pitching staff of that team?
Do you have a roster?
Do you?
I remember Nuke, and I guess...
I remember some of the pitchers, but I don't remember all of them. Because each year sort of molds together after a while, but... We had Erskine and Preacher Rowe and two of our starters. And Preacher was an outstanding pitcher. He had the ability to get the Yankee hitters off stride. And Erskine, of course, struck out quite a few Yankees one game. I don't know if it was in 52 or not, but he struck out 14 Yankees. And I think he got Collins four times and Mantle four times and a couple other guys several times, striking out 14. And Mantle was hoping that the Johnny Mize was getting on him because he wasn't in the game and they sent him up to pinch hit. And they're all pulling for him to strike out because he was getting on him because Richmond was striking them all out. And he says, I don't want to get up again. I don't want to strike out five. But Erskine, if he wouldn't have had arm trouble, there's just no... He'd have been a Hall of Famer.
Wow.
He had super stuff. He had Koufax stuff.
Koufax.
You mentioned that every Dodger had a story about how Pee-wee helped them. How did Pee-wee help you?
Well, from the shoulders up, I was my own worst enemy. I thought too much, and I got down on myself if I didn't come through in a clutch situation and things like that, and Pee-wee would talk to me and get me to mellow out a little bit and shrug it off. And sometimes it'd be something written in a paper that I didn't like. And Pee-wee said, there's nothing older than yesterday's newspaper. What do they do with it? They wrap fish in it, or they put garbage in it, or put it down for the dog. He says, don't worry about it. And it was good advice. He gave me some real good advice.
1954, there was a batting race. Went down to the end. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, there were three of us, Don Mueller, Willie Mays, and myself. But I led the league all year, and we got down to the weekend before the end of the season, and I was leading by about 8 points. And I got a hit my first time at bat in a doubleheader on Sunday, and I went 0 for 8. The rest of the day. So I went 1 for 9 in the doubleheader, and I lost about 4 or 5 points. And that brought us pretty close together. Then the rest of the week went on to the last day of the season. There's just percentage points between the three of us. And the Giants were in Philadelphia, and we were playing Pittsburgh in Brooklyn. And whoever has a good day is going to win the batting title. And that night we were going to go on TV, Ed Sullivan's show, for some All-Star Awards of some kind. I don't know what, some magazine or something. I forget exactly, Look Magazine or something like that, All-Star team. And first time up, I had a line drive to the second baseman. It's Mazeroski. And the next time up, I hit a 400-foot fly ball to center field. The center fielder jumped up and caught Bob Skinner, I think it was. And the next time up, I popped up. I went 0 for 3. And Carl Spooner was pitching for us, and he was knocking them down pretty good, striking them out and everything. And I ended up only getting to bat three times. I was the next hitter up when, in the bottom of the eighth inning, we won the game 2-0, something like that. And I was the next hitter up, and Pee Wee made the last out, and I didn't get up. But one more hit wouldn't have done it for me, because Mays went 3-for-5 and Mueller went 2-for-5. And I went 0-for-3. And as a result, I finished third. Mm. But that's no, that's, I don't mind that.
Bad.
I don't mind that, because I would have liked to have led the league. Don't get me wrong, but it wasn't a matter of life and death. The team finished, I think we were in second place that year. 54 was the Giants' year. They won. They got in the pennant. Mm-hmm. I think they won it that
year. They won it that year, right?
They beat Cleveland. But it was a fun time. It was it was the best year I had at bat. I hit 341, something like that. And I was hitting 350 a week before, something like that.
The story I came across that I have to ask you about, it had to do, right around that time, it had to do with contract negotiations and Branch Rickey and Branch Rickey's secretary. And I don't know whether it's true or not, but something about you coming in, you and Gil walking by and her saying that you couldn't go any further until you signed.
That was Pee Wee and I.
Okay.
This was Buzzy Bavese was in charge of the contracts. And he'd called Pee Wee up and he'd called me up, and we really hadn't arrived at a figure for our yearly salary, because every year you had to renew your contract, because there were no multi-year contracts then. But Buzzy had said, well, come on down, told Pee Wee and I both, says, come on down, spring training, and we'll have you sign your contract down here. Well, what am I going to make, you know? We'll talk about it when you get down here. So we went down. First day of spring training started, we went into the clubhouse and put our uniforms on. We still hadn't signed. And we came out of the clubhouse, out to the practice field, and here's Edna, who's Buzzy Bavese's secretary. And Edna's got two contracts in her hand. She said, you can't work out until you sign these contracts. And I says, Edna, there's no figure in here. And Buzzy says, well, we'll get that straightened out, but you got to sign the contract so you can go out and work out. And so Pee-wee said, well, there's no figure in mine either. He says, same thing, just sign it and we'll work it out. Mm. Buzzy said he'd work it out with you. So we signed, we didn't know what we were making until our first paycheck, and then we figured out how much we were making. We never did sit down and talk about it.
Obviously, a little different in the days before agents.
A little different today, of course, but we knew approximately what we were going to make, mm-hmm. but we weren't positive of the exact figure. It's just like Gil and Buzzy sat down one time, and Gil wanted $27,500 for that year. He had a good year the year before, and we're not talking about much money now today, but that was a lot of money then. Anyway, Gil wanted $27,500, and Buzzy said, well, I can't give it to you, Gil. That's X amount of dollars raise. And he said, if the ball players hear about it, they're going to come to me and want more money and this and that. And he said, I can't do it, but he said, I'll tell you what I'll do. He says, I'll put five pieces of paper, I'll tear up five pieces of paper here, and I'll write a figure on each piece of paper. And I'll put them all in his hat. And then you draw one out, and that's what you're going to make next year. And Gil says, oh, sounds good to me. So what Buzzy did, he put $27,500 on all five pieces of paper. Gil doesn't know this. And so Gil reaches in, pulls it out. He said, I got my $27,500. Buzzy says, well, you got me that time, Gil. And he took the hat with the other piece of paper, put it under his desk. And Gil, to this day, doesn't know. Well, he's dead now, but he didn't know to his dying day. He didn't know that The other four slips had $27,500 on them.
Who did Buzzy send the hunting dogs to?
Billy Lowe's.
Billy Lowe's.
Yeah, Billy Lowe's story. Wanted a raise, and he wanted a dog for his mother and father, a watchdog. And they wouldn't give him the dog. Lowe's was going to go home. He wasn't going to stay and play for the Dodgers because they wouldn't give his mother and dad a hunting dog, or a watchdog, right. I should say.
Eventually broke down and sent it, huh?
Pardon?
Did they eventually break down and send him the dog?
No. No. And he pitched. He was a good pitcher, too. Lowe's was a very good pitcher. He was with us. He lost a high chopper in a World Series in the Sun.
I remember hearing that.
Playing the Yankees, and they ended up scoring a couple runs off of that.
So 1955 is next year is finally this year. You guys finally beat the Yankees. Can you talk a little bit about that World Series in that year?
Well, we got off to a tremendous start. We won 10 in a row and lost a game or so. We were 22-2 at the start of the season. And we figured again, the writers did, that play 500 ball, we're going to win the pennant. Unless
been down that road
unless
before.
The Giants, unless the Giants get hot again. So we cinched the pennant that year a few days after Labor Day.
Oh, wow.
The earliest it's ever been cinched in the National League.
Wow.
And so we had fun. My wife was pregnant with our third child. And so she was home in California. And we went on a Western trip, and I flew home from Cincinnati. The team was going to Chicago and then St. Louis. And I was going home because the baby was due any time. And I flew home for 2 or 3 days. Because we had 3 weeks for the World Series. And so we were just biding some time. Right. Numbers weren't important. Didn't matter. You know, you could have stayed there and played every game and tried to get individual numbers. But it didn't mean anything because we'd already cinched the pennant.
Right.
And we weren't numbers conscious at that particular stage of our lives. And I went home and flew back to St. Louis and joined the team in St. Louis and pinched hit, I think, the night I got back. But then played the next night and started. Last week of the season, we all played and got ready for the World Series. And we got into the World Series and lost two and went to Ebbets Field and won three. Went back to Yankee Stadium and got beat. The series was tied 3-3. And Tommy Byrne is pitching against, who pitched for us? Johnny Padres, mm-hmm. right? Johnny Padres right. pitched for us, and Padres shut him out 2-0. We got on the bus to go to Yankee Stadium from Ebbets Field, where we parked our cars. Padres said, give me one run, that's all I'll need. Mm-hmm. Well, we give him a bonus, we got him 2 runs. Mm-hmm. And that's all he needed. We won 2-0 and won our first World's Championship. And it was so heavenly taking that bus back because for some reason everybody in the city knew our route of our bus. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And there was confetti coming from all the buildings in Manhattan, going across the Brooklyn Bridge and into Brooklyn. People were playing baseball on the Brooklyn Bridge and we couldn't hardly get through the people standing on our route back to Ebbets Field. Back into Brooklyn. It was some kind of day.
Wait until next year.
They waited for so long, and they finally got them one.
Of the three teams, is it fair to say the Dodgers were the most beloved team in this town?
It's turned out that way.
Yes.
It's turned out that it seemed like everybody loved the Dodgers throughout the country. And most people rooted against the Yankees because they won all the time.
U.S. Steel.
But we had a team that had some character. We had some household names on the team. Pee Wee Reese, everybody loved him. And I mentioned I went gave a rundown of our players, and Jim Gilliam was was 1-55, and he was an outstanding player, switch hitter, leadoff man. He told us one time in spring training, he says, "Man," he says, "I'm really happy to be on this team." He says, "I like to run." He says, "I want you guys to run me all the time. Just keep getting those extra base hits, and I'll score for you." Well, in July, he came up to us and he says, "You're overdoing it. I'm so tired I can't hardly walk." And we ended up, he ended up having a good year and just a super guy to have on our club.
When did you lose Campy to the accident?
I heard about Campy's accident on the radio. So I was out in California. It happened in the wintertime.
Okay.
And had shed some tears about it because Campy was such a lovable guy and just the heart of our ball club. And it was such a relief to know that he wasn't going to die, but it was really troublesome that he was going to be paralyzed and not be able to walk again or do the things that he enjoyed doing so much. But I didn't go see him in the hospital because it's just like funerals. I don't like to go to funerals. So I like to remember the people the way they were, the way I knew them. And to go, it's like I went to my mother's at the funeral home and looked at my mother. And I touched her skin and it was eerie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like open caskets or anything like that at funerals. I've already got in my last will that I be cremated and the ashes spread out over the Pacific Ocean. I'm not into graves or anything like that.
Right.
I remember the people as they were when they were alive, and that's the way my memories, I want them to be. That's kind of a eerie thing, but it's something we're all going to go through.
Mm-hmm.
But we're just leasing this body anyway. We're not. This body isn't ours. We're just leasing it. It's our soul that's going to go on. We're not going on. Our bodies aren't anyway. So there's all kinds of sense: ashes to ashes, dust to dust, things
right.
like that. But I'm a firm believer in remembering and loving. I'll always love my mother and father and my friends. I miss John Drysdale and Pee Wee Reese more than like family. I mean, they were to me like family. They were like brothers to me, and I miss them terribly because they were such good friends.
Campy and Don died in the same summer, didn't
Campy
they?
And Don died within a week of each other.
Remember that.
And I saw Don at Campy's memorial service, and I told him when I saw him, I says, "Don, you look as good as I've ever seen you look." And a week later, he died in Montreal in his hotel room.
I remember Peter O'Malley telling a lot of the players not to come back west for Don's funeral because he was worried about the health of a lot of players. Joe Black said that just didn't want to make them do it twice that quickly.
Well, I wouldn't have missed it because Don and I were such good friends that I would, you know, Campy too, but Don and I palled around together all the time. We were like brothers. And
nice man.
It was sad. Mm-hmm. It was sad. He was a fierce competitor, Drysdale, and just mm-hmm. loved the game of baseball. He was the heart of that Los Angeles Dodger ball club. Koufax was the best pitcher, but Don Drysdale was the heart of that ball club.
How was that for a 1-2 punch? Was there ever better?
There weren't many any better. Different type pitchers. Koufax, I could hardly wait to go to the park when he was pitching because he might pitch another no-hitter. And Drysdale very seldom pitched a no-hitter or close to a no-hitter, but had a lot of scoreless innings. But he usually had runners on base.
He liked to challenge runners a little bit, or hitters a little bit.
When he pitched in the Coliseum, and they had the short left field screen, he said, "I hate this ballpark." He said, "Every time I throw a pitch, I scrape my knuckles on that screen out of left field.
His piece of work. Richie Ashburn used to write for the Philadelphia Bulletin, and every time the Phillies went out there, long after he retired, he'd write an ode to the Dodgers, because they'd spend so much time on the West Coast without the Padres. They go back and forth San Francisco and L.A., and they might get Colfax twice and Drysdale twice and Marichal twice, and they actually look forward to Colfax because he wasn't mean. He said his control was so good that if he wanted to kill them, he could have. The other two could have and tried, but Koufax never threw it at him.
Drysdale would have fun with Mantle. Mickey Mantle and Drysdale were real good buddies. But when the All-Star game came about, Drysdale was on the All-Star team. And every once in a while, he was a starting pitcher. And he'd go up to Mickey, and Mickey, of course, would bat left-handed against Drysdale. And Drysdale would go up and he says, "Where do you want it, Mickey? You want it here? You want it here? You want it in here?" He says, "Get out of here."
Talk about the move and how you felt for Brooklyn. Did you see it coming? Did anyone see it coming?
Well, I think they did. I think we knew the last night we were playing Pittsburgh in Ebbets Field. We knew that more than likely would be the final game. We weren't sure, but we were pretty much sure, but that would be the last game. I didn't want to play in the last game. My last at bat in Ebbets Field, I hit a home run, hit my 40th home run on a Sunday. We played Pittsburgh two games, and then we went to Philadelphia for the final three games.
Okay.
And I didn't want to play in that final game, and didn't. But it just looked like there was only about 6,000, 7,000 people in the stands, and it looked darker. It didn't look like the lights were as bright as they usually were that night at Ebbets Field to me. And I'm just sitting there on the bench looking around. So I wasn't on the bench very much, early in my career I was, but I just sit there, this is eerie. It's like a dream, a bad dream. And it was the last game at Ebbets Field. Never took the field there again. But nobody wanted to move on the players. Nobody wanted to move, especially Gil, because Gil's wife and children were born in Brooklyn. And he stayed here year round. The rest of us went to our respective homes, spent the winter. But it was sad. It was a very sad time. And when the announcement came, my wife and I heard the official announcement over the radio. And I think we were in a car. And shed a tear or two because of the friends and fans we had in Brooklyn. And for my teammates, most all of them said that they shed a few tears too when they heard about it. Because we were born and raised, baseball-wise, in Brooklyn. And it was like tearing something out of you, you know?
To this day, you hear Brooklyn Dodger fans, New York Giant fans say, New York was and always will be a National League town. Is that the way you felt when you played here?
I never thought of it as a National League town. I think the way we were received in Brooklyn by people that lived in Brooklyn, it was home. It was home to us, and we were very comfortable.
Players lived in Brooklyn?
We hardly ever came to Manhattan, mm-hmm. hardly ever came to Manhattan, except to go to a Broadway play or something mm-hmm. like that, and have dinner occasionally in Manhattan, but we didn't come over very often. My wife would come over and go shopping once in a while, but mm-hmm. that's about it. We were locked into Brooklyn.
Players literally lived among their fans.
Right.
Different time, different era.
Very different, yes. Nobody owned a home, though. Nobody would buy a house. Gil's the only one. But I rented the same house in Bay Ridge for 7 or 8 years. Mm. If the money I spent renting, I could have almost bought that place. But we didn't have security. We had 1 year contracts. We weren't making a whale of a lot of money. We were making, in those days, decent money. But all of us could have, we were there for such a long period of time, we could have bought a house. Jackie bought a house, and Campy bought a house, and they spent the winters here.
Okay. The Subway Series, a couple of years ago, it was like the world was coming to an end here in New York because the Mets and Yankees finally played. When you had Subway Series, did the whole town stop and take notice?
I don't know. We took the bus over to Yankee Stadium and took it back and then went to have dinner somewhere in Brooklyn. And I don't know what the city was doing, but I know they were watching some baseball and some good baseball.
Yeah.
1956, perfect game. What was that like being on the field that day?
Well, all I remember about Don Larsen's perfect game was that we had knocked him out of the box in the second game in Brooklyn. And we go over to Yankee Stadium, and he's pitching against us, and we don't have any hits, and it's about the fifth inning. And Jackie said on the bench, "Let's don't let this guy shut us out." He didn't say anything about a no-hitter then, but mm-hmm. we all knew he had a no-hitter. But don't let this guy shut us out. And it's only 2-0, I think. The score, Magby pitched a whale of a game. Mm-hmm. But got a little bit later, and finally says, "Somebody get a hit." You know, somebody hollered on the bench, "Somebody get a hit. This donkey's got a shutout and a no-hitter." And that was sort of the talk on the bench. Mm-hmm. Still let this guy, I mean, he didn't have a winning record. Mm-hmm. And he pitches a perfect game. And you got to give him credit. He had good stuff that day, and every ball that was hit was right at somebody. And the Yankees played good defense. Jackie hit a ball off third baseman's ankle and went out to shortstop, and they threw him out of first base. Mm. I mean,